the wand, a puff of smoke, and the magic man pulls one out of the hat.
I still can't believe it happened.
Welcome to the Mirror's Magic Supercoach podcast following round 18, a famous round, lots of injuries, some we knew of leading in, some we learnt on the Friday and even on the Saturday. And coaches were certainly tested with their teams. Got Tommy to discuss that and the run home. How are you, Tommy?
Yeah, good, mate. Bloody carnage coming into teams and over the weekend. I don't think, we probably say this every year, but I don't feel like we've seen quite that much carnage to high-owned players in any other year. And in a year where most players are down on trades too, it obviously made it difficult and there was lots of donuts flying around, which, you know, if people got lucky, because I don't think it was much to do with the cover because everyone got hit so hard that if you really got lucky and, you know, you missed out on a few of those, I guess, pod picks like Sarong, who was out, and the Cameron, it really did help and sort of propelled some people up the rankings and some people down, which is just the luck of this game.
Yeah, you're right. I can't remember a round like it. And I think you're right. It's probably a good thing that they were all very highly owned. So we're all in that same boat, whether it was a Tom Green, Darcy Cameron, Dunkley, for those who are still owning him. But I know people had Sheldrick as cover, then he was another one out. People still have Hayden Young in defence, Jake Lloyd. So it was a very tricky week. How did you handle it in terms of trades? Did you wear a donut? Who was your cover? And what score did you end up pumping out?
Yeah, didn't cop a donut, which was very lucky. I thought I was gonna. But then Angwin obviously got picked, which was good. I didn't get his score. Marek was picked, which also helped. And then had Johnson in the mids as cover if the worst happened. But I actually didn't rely on either Angwin or Johnson. So I made the trade. I moved on Green, obviously a hamstring, and the word was 2 to 3. And I think that's certainly over the threshold given his M8 in most people's team, and he certainly was in mine. So I moved him on to Sicily, which obviously didn't work out. I'm not sure what Ratton's doing tagging defenders, but that man wants another contract, so good on him. But he shut down Sicily, so I ended up losing points if I just held Green and fielded Johnson. But I think in the long term, that's obviously, well, hopefully will work out. So I ended up fielding just the two rookies in Cunningham and Marek, and managed to climb the ranks, which was honestly pretty surprising to me, given that I had a fair few poor performers in Neil, obviously, who's highly owned, Merritt, then Sicily, who's a relatively big pod as well. So I scored a 24.76 and climbed the ranks up to 323. And I think I've got Big Timmy English to thank for that, who was my vice captain. And obviously, I think that the main differential over the weekend was probably those that had moved on English and opted to hold Briggs. And then Briggs obviously, I guess, put up an underwhelming score. It could have been a lot worse given what he was on at halftime. But that 173 being doubled really did help. So pretty happy with the round all in all. And obviously the trade from Green to Sicily didn't work out, but that's a long-term play. And I think Sicily will bounce back. How'd you go?
Well, just a bit more on yours. So that's a monster score, 24-7 with Sicily in it, which is going to obviously hold you in good stead. Does that give you one trade remaining for the rest of the season?
Yeah, so I've got one, which, like, I think in terms of where I sit, like, I hope Johnson holds his spot. Angwin, Marek and Cunningham are decent cover. The only area that I don't have cover is in defense. So I think in terms of, you know, holding that trade, I'll certainly be holding 1 week unless it's in defense and it's just, I can get up to someone really good. So pretty happy with where I sit. One, I definitely don't feel comfortable with, but I know there's obviously coaches out there that sit in a much worse position, particularly after the weekend that we just had.
And then with your, just probing you a bit with trying to learn off the best, because I still believe you are the best, looking at Supercoach data. So I reckon he's gypped you a little bit with the rankings for this Hall of Fame he has. So you're the only one to come top 10 twice. And out of all the ones in the Hall of Fame, I think they've got you coming 11th or something now, but you're the highest ranked so far this year out of those above you. So I reckon they could almost give that last year a mulligan.
I reckon you might be looking at, I don't know. There's definitely a few players above me. I'll bring it up now, but I feel like there definitely should be a mulligan in there. I was like, I think I was like 4,000 or something coming out of the buys before I brutalized my team. But that's the aim of the game. Yeah, there's a couple that are obviously higher than me this year. I think there's two. So, yeah, look, I think coming off last year, that was obviously a bit of a mulligan, but I'm glad to have bounced back this year and hopefully I can avoid some carnage and, you know, hopefully aim for that top 100, which is probably the goal every year.
Well, I think it's realistic for you, especially with that trade up your sleeve again, Supercoach Dart. If you haven't checked out his page on Twitter, it's very good, at Data Supercoach. So he's saying that 25% of teams, or 24% of teams in the top 1,000 have zero trades left, 34% have one, and 26 have two. So anyone with a trade's in a good position. You obviously traded Green for Sisley. You're tossing up between using two to move Sheasel or doing a straight swap day. I think you're quite happy now you've got both of those. Does that then mean, even though you've got no cover in defence, have you got a midfielder who's got defender status who you can, if there's an injury, if it's announced before teams, you'll still be able to do some DPP to get a Johnson or Angwin's cover?
No, I don't.
How have you turned Which Green into Sisley then? How have you done that?
Oh, yeah, sorry. No, I did. So who do I bring in? I moved Nick Dacos to my midfield. Yeah, no, sorry.
Yeah, so if you get an injury in defence, you'll be able to swap Dacos down back to cover and then use your midfield cover, hopefully.
Yeah, well, that's why you're the goat, Charles. I honestly didn't even think of that, mate. When I made the trade, it was sort of that last minute decision. I didn't like any of the mids that I could jump on. So, yeah, got comfortable sitting back there, swapped Dacos back and used Johnson as cover. Look, best laid plan.
Worth jumping off the pod for that.
I thought of it.
No, well, only reason why I know, because I'm clutching all straws to get my cover given that I've got no trades left. And again, going back on that probably false trade I made the week before where I got in a Constable over the Harvey, the red dot, to flick around. But part of it was that I could flick the extra defender down back and bring it in a Sheasel into the midfield, which I did this week. I had Sheasel covering Green. So while DPP, I know a lot of the listeners here have come from the fantasy background, I don't think it gives much weight in fantasy, because if there's an injury with DPP, typically you trade them out straight away anyway, or the best midfielders are typically, you want to have the top eight mids and not the flexibility. Whereas in Supercoach, you're forced to hold. That DPP certainly comes in your favour. So in terms of my week, I scored a 24-23. So I think I was staring down the barrel when I sent out the trade insights of three donuts with, what were the three donuts I was relying on? Marek obviously wasn't picked. I needed him in there. Oh, there's two other I was relying on with team. Oh, Jordan Ridley, who thought he did an ACL the week before, somehow gets himself up and plays well. And then there was also the murmurs about Will Day, which thankfully didn't come to fruition. So I managed to scrape to 18. It was a bit of luck, as you said. Like, yes, you did well having cover, but we needed extra cover here. Like, most coaches had potentially, if you're holding a Dunkley and a Sheldrick and a Cameron, that's your donut. So lucky to get Marek's laid in, and lucky to get his 67 or whatever he ended up getting. It's something I was budgeting a 30 for him. So that bumped me up the ranks to 167. So heading in the right direction for that top 100. Obviously, as we all know, no trades left. But with that DPP swing, I'm comfortable with my cover, knowing that I've got a Sheasel to be able to swing in the midfield if need be, or defence cover, a Darcy Cameron in the forwards or rucks. And we'll be interested to see how we go, because there's already murmurs of Butters, but I think I've just read Twitter then. It sounds like Butters is in this week. There's question marks on Rory Laird, but Josh Dunkley is back. Quickly talk about Sisley. Obviously, I was pretty bullish on him as well. Slight flag we did give about the Eddie forward tag. But I think from now, the reason why he was such an appealing pick is we saw how little trades coaches had left. And teams are very similar at the top with those defenders, with a Dacos, Dawson, Sinclair, Stewart combination, Will Day and a Sheasel, that if you can jump on someone like a Sisley and they punch out a big score, you can really climb the ranks in the coach. I'm just trying to have a look at how many coaches did manage to trade him in around the top and how much of a pod he is. Have you got that number there, how much he is in the top 1%?
I've got it on the Moyers website. So in the Top 1,000%. In the top 1,000, he's in 29% of teams, 32 of the top 100. So he's been obviously brought in by around the third of the competition, which remains a really big pod still. Like, it doesn't sound like a massive number, but when you're looking at the, like my team, for instance, because teams even up so much, he's the second least owned player in my entire side that sees the field regularly. So it's just him and Lilla. So he remains a big pod. And, you know, I picked him because of that high scoring potential in combination with the run home. So I think when we sort of look at what he can do, he provides the most upside. So I'm pretty confident that those that jumped on and those that were able to jump on probably the main part, he should come home with a bit of a wet sail. He's also a very proud footballer. So he's going to know that he had a down game, and I think he's going to bounce back pretty well. And Richmond give up a fair few points to defenders, as do St Kilda, who he's got over the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, Richmond give up plenty, and no one gives up more than St Kilda. So I think he's certainly going to right the wrongs for those coaches who probably regretted, as you did, trading him in last week. It's going to come to fruition. In terms of some scoring over the weekend, obviously, we say we love the super coach scoring. I think I love the super coach scoring. Obviously, some goes in your favour, some doesn't. Started off with a Petrarch. I can't believe what he scored for the game he had. What do you have? 26 touches, 4 goals, 16 contested possessions, 7 clearances, and what do you get, a 112 or something?
113. He got scaled down as well, which is just outrageous considering what that was the points they were stacking onto Gorn. And, you know, 4 goals and close to 30 touches is, you know, that's 150 every week. And it's not like he had, you know, glaring issues. Like, he went at 65, which is around his mark by foot. And he only had the 3 clangers, had 3 free kicks for and only gave up 1. So it's hard to explain. I know there was a lot of coaches on Twitter hounding Fantasy Freako. I would have hated to be his inbox, but everyone was looking for answers and no one got any, I don't think, unless I missed it. So, yeah, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You know, and these are the games, because he's playing predominantly forward, you know, it's the high ceiling games that are going to make him a valuable pick on the run home, because there is going to be down ones if he's playing deep forward. It's just the nature of the role, and that should have been heaps higher.
Yeah, that is the concern with him. I think owners would be a bit nervous now with that, what, 40-60 split mid forward. There's a few, like Noah Anderson, I thought, he got the 10 coaches votes, 25 touches, kicks a lot, 15 kicks, 11 contested possessions, 12 score involvements. And he scored an 89 or something in an easy win. So, yeah, the game, it's a funny game we play. And we all, just when I think I've sorted out this scoring formula, I'm sitting there watching games. Yeah, okay, this guy could be on an okay one there. And some come in your favour. As I said, I don't know how an 8-possession game from old Marek netted himself a 67. So I think it ebbs and flows. It just shows that you can never be too far on top of this game. So the way coaches are sitting now, most, as we said, have 0 trades, 1 trade, or 2 trades. Assuming there's no injuries this week and Laird fronts up and teams are pretty good, Cameron comes back and Butters plays, Dunkley comes back. What's your advice to those coaches with 1 trade left? Would you do it as a move to, if you're trying to climb the ranks, to get a pod like a Sicily, like a Dan Houston, who's getting it done there? Some few players in the midfield getting it done. We can speak about a few specific pods. Or do you still think with 6 weeks to go, your best play is to hold that trade and wait for an injury because that's your time to pounce?
Yeah, I'm definitely more on the conservative side in terms of using that trade. But the way that I've always played this game is that trade is so valuable. And I think this year it's probably more valuable than ever, even if you got 2. Because we go back through the years that I'd come top 10, I had a lot of trades on the run home, and it was what got me home or held me in those positions. Because, you know, if you cop a donut, that's going to hurt so much. And if that happens for multiple weeks, it's going to hurt even more. Even if we look at, like, one of the years I came top 10, there was a bunch of injuries in the last round, which happens all the time, just given it's the last round of the year. There's not a heap to play for for the bottom teams. And if there's a player that needs to go off for surgery, they'll usually give him a rest and blood some youngsters. And one of the years I was forced into a trade, everyone either had to carry cover actually both years it was. So in the first year, I believe it was Daniel Rich, jumped on Rich. He scored 170-something, but it was a forced trade. No one else could make that move, but that held me into the top 10. And then the following year, it was Dawson, and I think he had a 150-odd, and that was a forced trade as well, where others couldn't make that move. So even if it is just a one-week injury, like from my experience, it's really, really valuable against the coaches that are copping donuts. And if you've got one trade and, you know, 30% of the competition don't have any, that's a massive advantage. And if that season-long injury comes next week to Merritt or Neil or Bond, you know, you would curse yourself so much using it as a luxury upgrade on someone like Sheasel, who was performing poorly. And I think I said I'd endorse it last week, Sheasel to Sicily. Obviously, that didn't work out on a one-week injury if you had two trades left. But at the same time, you move off of a player like that, the point gain could be not a whole heap, because Sicily's got, you know, 40 points he needs to catch up on Sheasel. That might take 3 or 4 weeks if Sheasel holds his role across half back without Siebel in the team. And if someone gets an injury, that's going to be wiped away so quickly. I think the risk of using that trade is just so much outweighed by the benefit of having it there in case you're copping a donut, or, you know, saving your fielding Ryan Marrick over Butters. You know, if that groin injury was worse and he's out for three, and you can move off of Butters while everyone else is fielding a Marrick, you know, that's a massive point gain, and the luxury just doesn't provide that same point gain. So I'd be holding definitely for the next, like, you know, really even 4 weeks, and if it's the last two, yeah, take the risk.
Yeah, and who's to know? Hopefully there's a pre-finals bye, and also the performance from the teams post-bye, which is well documented, all the losses teams had coming off the bye, showing that week off rest, yes, it might be good for your niggles and body, but you kind of lose a bit of your touch. Hopefully it means that we won't see some Ross Lyon-style resting players in the final week of the season. But if we do, that's the week you might see some players getting rested and freshen up for finals. So those trades certainly might become valuable, or if it's down the bottom end and teams out of the race, sending players off for long-term surgery. So what we'll do now, obviously, we've put in there our best 22 in the trade insights in the past. I'll do it again in this upcoming trade insights for those coaches who do have trades, but more just a strategy for trying to climb against the comp and looking at pods across each position and who our most favourable are. Obviously, looking in defence, as I mentioned, there's a very common back line of Dacos, Dawson, Stewart, Sinclair, Will Day and Sheasel. That's the very common mix. So that's it's minor outside. I haven't got a Jack Sinclair in there. Looking at the top scorers so far this year, like Luke Ryan, I think I wrote him off mid-year when he had the role on Jezza Cameron, just leading into the bye, and he had a role on Toby Green. And I think it identified thinking that he was going to play more of a defensive role, but that's been out the window. He's back doing what he does. He's a third highest averaging defender at 30% of the top 100, 37% of the top 1,000. So he's still very unique. But the one who's criminally under-owned is Dan Houston, 10% of the top 1,000, 16% of the top 100 have him. Last three, average of 139. You look back over his scores, he just 110 plus again, and again. Is that someone, if you did have luxury trades up your sleeve and you've got some underperformers in defence, to say I've got a Bailey Dale who's had a few poor ones in a row, is that the route you'd be taking to try to climb against the top, or would you just shoot for the top and get the best player you can see, who, regardless of ownership?
I think he's probably the best player that is available. To be honest, it's not highly owned. Like, I think the vast majority of that top 1% would own Dacos, Dawson, Tom Stewart. I think Sinclair might be the outlier in terms of those teams. But at the same time, we haven't seen Sinclair reach the heights that he did last year. He's kind of that 100-105 guy with the ability to have relatively high ceilings games, but not in comparison to last year. I think the one that is obviously the most tantalising is that Dan Houston. One, he's a massive pod, which obviously carries risk because you're sort of going against the competition. But his scoring ability and the ceiling that he presents with is massive. And, you know, if he's inconsistent, which is the knock on him, he can produce a low floor game. He does play Collingwood this week, that is the most restrictive against defenders when it comes to scoring and possessions. So that's one thing to keep in mind. But at the same time, you're sort of only getting him for 6 weeks. And if he pops off, you know, three or four 125 pluses and there's a couple of 80s sprinkled in there, that'll have him very, like, solidly in that top six in terms of average between now and the end of the season. And if you're getting out of someone that might go 95 to 100, that's a pretty significant point gain. So for me, I think he's the obvious one. And I really like him. I definitely considered him when looking at Sicily, but for me, I thought Sicily was far, had the far greater upside. And obviously, I think he's probably going to be more consistent on the run home. So it'd be the debate between those two, I think. But is Houston, they're about the same. But Houston's a little bit more affordable. So I think either of those, you really can't go wrong, to be honest.
Yeah, I think I'll have to say I'm Sicily just above, but maybe that's just the old school mentality. We need to start taking note of this breakout season. He's going to be the All-Australian halfback flanker at Houston. He takes a kick-ins, takes marks, neat with his disposal, gets intercepts. So an absolute gun, and if you have the chance to get him, he could certainly be a ticket to climb up the ranks, particularly if we see that. We saw it last year with a Crisp and a Jaden Short who were just getting 80s and 90s, and those coaches who had the more unique Sinclair were putting points on them each week. Midfield, I know most midfields are relatively complete at the moment. It's funny looking at averages. LDU still shapes up very well despite that very lean patch he had in the middle of the season. He's still cheap, 550k, 4% ownership in the top 1,000, 4% in the top 100. He's the lowest owned player around that top mark. Can you see this continuing, or if you're looking for some unique play, you'd look elsewhere?
No, I like him, and that is price as well. I think around that mark, he's clearly the best option. Obviously, I think Sarong, Parrish is a fair bit more. I think he's about 40k more. So for me, I think he's definitely the best option. There's quite a few you can look at, but I think LDU, what he did coming home in the back end of last year, showed he's definitely got that scoring ability. The only concern is tags. Coming up against St Kilda this week, there's potential that he could cop a tag, maybe a Windhager job, because he's clearly their best mid. But at the same time, I think he is probably the best option on the run home. I don't think I'd jump on this week, given that the tag's probably coming from Windhager, though. Parrish, I really like Parrish as an option as well. I think as a pod, because he's got that really high scoring ability and he is pretty consistent.
Yeah, I'm actually with you there. I like the tags do scheme. I know LDU has a West Coast matchup in a couple of weeks' time, but even then, he's got a tag on his back that he is the best midfielder in that team, and coaches do like to shut him down, whereas Parrish, the knock on him is he's not that effective with his disposals. Coaches like to let him run free. And as an owner, it looks like he's tackling a lot more this year too, which is good. And obviously it was a tough matchup, Geelong at Geelong, but still did okay to scratch to just over 90. In terms of other pods, Josh Kelly's obviously lowly owned, but probably for a reason, given that he's had a couple of injuries so far this year. And that's been the story of his whole career to date. Took Miller's the one of interest. I put a line through him when Stewie Dew came out and said he's going to trial him on the half forward flank. Stewie gone and King puts him straight into the midfield. So time on ground was up. Inside minutes were up. Score wasn't super high, but we've seen in the past he's been a top couple scorer in Supercoach. And at 518k, I also really like him. Jack Steele, I also like him. I think he's looking back to the Jack Steele of old. So those coaches who do have trades up their sleeve and a bit low on funds, like, there's a couple of great options in the low 500 mark, being that Steele, Miller, LDU types, a bit more for Parrish. And yeah, kind of wish I had a few trades up my sleeve to do that. Mills, watching Mills, he doesn't look the same old Callan Mills. So despite his very cheap price tag of 440k, it's hard to see him getting back to that 105, 110. He's got the role. He's getting 60% centre bounces, 64% last week, but just isn't getting his hands on the ball. And I'm not sure what's going on there with him, but I've got a lot more confidence in those other guys. Where Mills came into the consideration was that 23rd man, which I'm still a believer in, particularly now this new age super coach seeing more and more injuries, one-week suspensions, where ideally you're not using a trade, like we saw on the weekend with four or five of them. If you've got a premium, you can plug and play and save having a rookie on the field. I think it's certainly worthwhile. But then again, you look at coaches, like I know Tim Mitchell got in his 23rd man, a Nat Fyfe and a Sheldrick, and then they end up getting season-long injuries anyway, so it could end up being a waste of a trade. But I'm a fan of that 23rd man if you've got that trade up your sleeve. The big pod to talk about in the ruck department, and this is where coach I think will be looking to execute the trade too, is big Maxi Gawn, who 215 high score for the year, crazy score, and against an Oscar McInerney, who typically is pretty restrictive and even had some good games in the past on a Max Gawn. The Grundy experiment's over. I doubt we're even going to see him again for the rest of the season, maybe a little bit, but it sounds like as a forward, and we'll still see 75-80% plus Max Gawn. It was 91% on the weekend, which is, we haven't seen this for about 4 years because he's been doing that sort of hybrid role with a Luke Jackson before Grundy arrived. So with that role, with what we know he can do, he can be the number one ruck in Supercoach. Looking at his ownership, 4 of the top 100, 5% of the top 1,000. I dare say a fair few of them might have been outside of that and came rattling in with that 215 on the weekend. I think if you're an owner of a Briggs or one of these second tier rucks, if someone went a Sean Darcy, got injured again, I think that's the obvious choice to jump across. But is there a play to jump off the highly owned Rowan Marshall, 91 of the top 100, and Tim English, 82 of the top 100, to do a Max Gawn? Would you consider either of those two?
I wouldn't be trading out English. We've seen how that backfired with those that went to Briggs. I think he's clearly the number one ruck and has been over the entire year. I guess, you know, Gawn could put points on him, but if you're looking at trading someone out, it's going to be that R2. And obviously with Gawn's price, he's not prohibitive in terms of who you bring in there. What's it cost you to get from Marshall?
Nothing.
Yes, straight slot basically. So, yeah, I think Marshall's the obvious move there. I think what Gawn can do over six rounds is definitely, you know, that's a season-defining pick. It's a game-winning pick, really, because if he is going to be playing number one ruck however long that lasts for, at least, you know, it's going to probably last for two, given what we've heard out of Melbourne and Grundy needing to go back. I don't even think the two's played on the weekend, so he had to play a scratch match, which is obviously at a lower intensity than probably the normal VFL game. So I think, you know, you're going to get at least two to three out of Max Gawn solo. Grundy might come back, but it's going to probably be as a forward, so he's not going to go under 70%. Ruck time, you wouldn't think, and in getting those numbers, he could easily be the number one ruck between now and the end of the year and put 20 points a week on Marshall, because Marshall hasn't exactly been setting the world on fire.
Yeah, it's funny. Marshall's been setting the world on fire in fantasy, and even against Wits the other day, put up a 99, which is respectable, but it was a 58 super coach, and a lot of it is because his hitouts aren't, because he's not that big bodied ruckman, a tall ruckman, he doesn't get the clear hitouts to advantage, and he just kicks the ball a lot for a ruckman, which in fantasy is good, you get the extra point, but in super coach it's a lot of ineffective disposals outside of when normally your ruckman just give off the little handball and you get a few disposals there. So what's he done? He got 58 last week, 108 season average, 104 last three. You've got one trade left, Tommy. Is there no temptation at all just to do that 4% of the top 100, 5% of the top 1,000, and do the straight swap Marshall to Gawn and take a punt that way?
There is a bit of temptation, and I know if you were in my situation, I reckon you'd pull the trigger.
I'd do it every day of the week.
I know you would. So there's a little bit of temptation, but for me, I think the trade is more valuable, to be honest. Like, while Marshall hasn't set the world on fire, it's not like Max Bourne doesn't come with any element of risk. And, look, I play this game conservatively. I definitely do. And I think last year particularly it backfired around being slow to jump on breakouts and pods. So, look, there's definitely a temptation there, but I feel 6 weeks is way too long to go without any trade, especially with what my cover is. Like, Johnson was subbed a couple of weeks ago. We've got Ryan Angwin, who, yeah, put up 75 on the weekend, but, you know, he was subbed two games before that and had two scores under 20. It just poses a little bit too much risk for me, but, like, it's tempting. But I think for the way I play this, I don't think I'm going to go there. And personally, I'd rather, you know, back in that it might backfire to other coaches based on the fact that they've used their trade rather than me doing it if others were going to go there. So certainly tempting. I think if I had two trades, it would be definitely something I'd looked at, but I probably would have burnt that last week on Sheasel to Sicily. So, I think if I had two, I'd definitely consider it, but I think with one, probably not.
What about then the Briggsy? I like your conservative play, and it's actually an attacking play, as you said. Like, you, there's attacking to hold those trades, and that then becomes that pod. If you were a Briggs owner, what are you short there, 50K, 60K, and you could do it in one trade or even two trades and you've got the two up your sleeve, would you then do the move from a Briggs to a Gorn?
If you can do it in one, 100%. If you can do it in two and you've got Cameron, yeah, I reckon. I think the difference in points between what Gorn and Briggs are going to put up over the rest of the season is probably worth the gamble.
Yeah, he's got Wicks this week too, Briggsy. I think,
yeah,
with the Cameron to back up, you don't need the trade. I'd be happy to go to zero trades if you've got cover for a Briggs move to Gorn. You're right, like, Marshall has put up big scores in the past. There's talk of him even being a late search for All-Australian Ruckman. So I'm comfortable enough with him unless they name. So here's one for you then. What if they name Max Heath alongside, knowing that they've got injuries to their tall forwards, they need some height down there, they're not kicking a score? What if they name another ruckman come Thursday?
But Heath would play forward, wouldn't he? Like, that's sort of where he came in and played last year and was sort of, yeah, backup ruckman, wasn't he?
Yeah, you're probably right.
I still don't think I'd pull the trigger on that. Like, it'd be more tempting. What's Marshall's break even? It's going to be really low, isn't it? I'm in real high. No, it's only 116. I have 62,000 there. I think with Gorn, if he'll have a relatively low one. As long as he didn't go 135 plus, I should be able to still get him. I'd rather have a look at it, to be honest.
So let's look at his matchups then, because I know you've got one left. I've got none. There's coaches out there with a couple. And whether you, and I know a lot of coaches do have the Marshall English. So Gorn's got O'Brien this week, who you think is okay. It's not an easy matchup, but he's been good against him in the past. Marshall's got a Cherry, who's also pretty good, but not, he's not the restrictive Goldie who's been in the past. And I think, who did, Reeves put up an okay score on the weekend. He then has Gorn, then has Richmond the week after, who I think it will still be a Soldo one. It won't be Nank. And Soldo's pretty good again, but Gorn, as we know, if he's number one ruck, he can beat any ruck in his day. And then Marshall has the Reeves, so I think he's ranked four for ruckman for hitouts, one for ruck contest. Like, he's a very hard ruck to ruck against. Then Gorn has the Cherry matchup versus North Melbourne, who you think at the very least it'll be a big win and you'll see a big score in his head. St Kilda play Carlton, De Koning, who Marshall should be fine against. Round 23, Gorn then has that matchup versus De Koning, who you think you'd do well against. And Marshall has Richmond. Then Marshall has Geelong, so Stanley, and Gorney will have Hawks. So that tricky matchup versus Reeves. It's just that round 24, which, I know it feels like a long way away, and by then he could be injured, could be playing with Grundy, could be out of your trades. And maybe this is where, if you save your one trade and you don't have that injury cover, it might be around 24 getting Max Gorn versus Sydney, who we just saw what Tim English did. And even before that, when Hickey was the number one ruck, Hickey puts up more, gives up more points than anyone in Supercoach. And that could be, and Marshall's got the big O. So if you've got that extra trade and you're tempted, you could probably hold on hope that come the last week of the year, you might be able to execute it. But having said that, you won't be able to do a straight swap like you can do now. So I'm sure it's something which coaches are considering. You know my view, I'm a bit aggressive and I'd be happy to do it. But I also said to you that I'd trade, I think I even said I'd trade Will Day for Sissy last week to be aggressive. So you win some, you lose some, but it's not a mad move if you're considering it. Just you wouldn't do it from English, even if you've got two trades left and that cash you make from English to go and get to your money on the outside. You want English from now to the rest of the year.
Yeah, 100%. And I think if you've got two trades, I think just given, like if you were looking at sort of what the stats Supercoach data put out and there was a lot of coaches with four trades and you were going to go down to one, I think you sort of hamstringing yourself and you know, leaving yourself up to the injury gods. But the fact that everyone else is really low on trades, I think that does present an opportunity. If you've got two, I think Marshall to Gawn is a really aggressive move and it does give you some cover to respond to an injury. And I think the Briggs move, if you can afford it and not go down to no trades, I'd tick that off as well. I think in comparison to sort of the moves of sort of Sheasel to Sicily, in comparison to, you know, Marshall or even Briggs for sure to Gawn, that point jump is even better. And I guess we both ticked it off last week. So if you weren't in that situation where you did that, I think doing it this week from that standpoint is the move that can give you the most amount of points.
Like it, mate. So then come the forward line, Josh Dunkley's returning, which I think is good news for those who held. There's 78% of them. I think we're saying it was 99% in the top 1,000 before he got injured. So coaches certainly did trade him, and I know him to Butters was a popular move, and there'd be a bit of irony there if Butters were to miss this week, but sigh of relief. He's just been announced today that he will be playing. But that sixth forward seems to be the tricky one. So Zach Butters has been underwhelming the last few weeks. Jack McRae, I thought, was potentially going to be the one, and thankfully I went rosy over him a couple of weeks ago because he's just not getting that inside midfield minutes. There's a Caleb Daniel who had his worst score for the year the other day. It's hard to find who that player's going to be. Is it Shire Bolton? I know coaches got him in last week for that easy matchup. He's another one who could have easily had a much higher score than the 105. Ned Flanders, I know you started the season with him. I don't know whether you like seeing him putting up these big scores as a vindication to your philosophies and processes with your starting squad build, or you're not liking it at all because what was Stewie Dew thinking? That could have been you as a competition winning pick come round one. But he's looking great, new coach, new role. He's been massive numbers in the VFL and in juniors. Who's to say he can't put up that number? And Nick Martin does it again, even in a tough... Oh, no, sorry, he did a poor score, but he has been in decent form up until last week at 1% ownership or 0% in the top 1,000. If you had to pick a pod for that sixth forward, knowing that most coaches have a Dunkley, Tirano, Goulden, Rosie, Butters, Cogs, who would your sixth pick be? And ideally a bit of a pod for coaches trying to take a bit of a punt.
I think, like, if you've got more than one trade, I think Flanders presents a pretty good opportunity if the role continues and the scoring is going to be there. If you add three, for sure, I reckon he'd be a great get because what that money can do to disperse across your team if the injuries do come or for late aggressive luxury upgrades, I think that presents a really good opportunity. I don't think there's going to be many in that boat. In terms of pod, because what you really want is, I guess, consistent scoring between now and the end of the year. Like, if you look at Nick Martin's scores on average in the last three, like that 58 on the weekend obviously hurts significantly, but obviously Merritt's score, the whole of Essendon's team score was down. And Nick Martin being a winger obviously isn't going to work in his favour as well on that small congested ground down at Geelong. So I really do like Nick Martin. I think when you look back at what his scores have been since round 11, they're elite. If you sort of take out that 58 on the weekend, he's clearly a top six over that period. with some really high ceiling games. So I think him as a pod pick is really valuable. But it is really slim pickings. So I think there's a sense of comfort in Shai Bolton, which is probably the direction that I would go, knowing that when he's playing midfield minutes, he can score as well as anyone. And they don't have the tough... Oh, it's not the easiest draw coming home.
I think he might. It's an easy run matchup this week. I'm just worried about Finn McGuinness. You'd think he's the natural fit for him to tag.
Right, true. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I honestly can't really see one. It would be Butters, but he's obviously carrying the groin injury. You don't want to go near Jack McRae. Caleb Daniel was underwhelming on the weekend, and I think in terms of being a pod play, he doesn't present that because the ceiling just hasn't been there over the last few weeks. If I had to pick one, it'd be Nick Martin, but I don't think I'd be looking for a pod in this forward line. And given that Butters is going to should get up, and the word is today that he's right to go, and the scans come back all clear. I don't think there's anyone really there. I think if you're going to trade into anyone that is a pod, I think it's probably going to come back to bite you, and I wouldn't be looking at doing any luxuries in that area, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think you're right. There's no one screaming. It's not like in defence where there's the popular players there and then there's some uniques who are putting up big scores or with Houston type. But forward, there's no one tempting except for that Flanders who I think we saw first week coach for King and Swallow, who's been at the fourth rung from a Miller, Anderson, Rao, probably for the last 4 years, midfielder. He's finally dropped out of that with a new coach and he's giving Flanders that fourth run. So 50% CBAs, massive scores in juniors. He'd be my pick there. So we mentioned the tag for Shai Bolton. Tag is back in vogue. Obviously, Finn doing his job, I think. Archie Perkins did a bit of a role on Dangerfield, and we've seen him do that a few times this year on a big-bodied mid. I wouldn't be surprised to see him go to the Bont on Friday night. What impact he'll have, given how big the Bont is, not too sure. We saw Atkins and O'Connor do a bit of a tag team on Merritt after he got off that hot start last week. So, concern, I'll be holding off my captain on a Lachie Neal, particularly after that poor score last week. Port tried to tag Dacos last time they played. He made them look silly. I'm not sure if they'll try that again. But looking at captain options this week, knowing there's a fair few taggers out there, Eddie Ford, does he do something on Jack Sinclair? He's done it 2 weeks in a row now from a Tom Stewart the week before and then Sisley last week. How are you currently set up for your captains and vice-captains? Because that's with teams with no trades up their sleeve, that's what we're relying on from now to the rest of the year.
Yeah, I think for me, I can't go past English coming up against Nick Bryan and maybe a Phillips. I'm not sure if Drake is going to be back. There hasn't really been any word that I've seen, so I think English will be the go. I think if Drapers comes in, I think there's definitely an argument for Bont. We're not going to be able to shut him down with Archie Perkins. I think... who's the big bloke that we all started in the midfield? His name is Blanken.
Setterfield. I don't know. I'm not sure if he's in their best. Mind you, they got smashed, but I'm liking these kids, Caldwell, Hobbs, Perks.
Yeah, he's fit, I think, and he's right to go. So he might come in, but I don't see that he's in our best mix. So I think it'll be an English and probably a Bont if Draper comes back. And then the captain, look, it's a really tough call. Like, I'd probably look at a Laird against Melbourne even, given that they're not going to tag, but obviously carrying that shoulder makes me really nervous to put it on him. Neil comes with concerns. It's going to be a really tough week. I think most likely I'll end up probably with a Nicky Dacos, to be honest, at this stage, just looking at it, or even a Sicily.
Yes, this would be a nice, bold one. I like it against Richmond, especially. You see it all year, and coaches jump off after a low score from a tag. Players post getting tagged, the freedom they then have, quite often they put a big score on their head. So I really like that call of Sisley. I think I'll be a Jordan Dawson captain with a vice captain of Bontempelli. But as always, I'll put my final thoughts come the trade insights. Thanks again, Tommy. Just quickly, that Setterfield one's funny how we think he's not going to make their best 22 now, and we reap the rewards of his big scoring at the Saudi, and then coaches who had a Flanders who wasn't getting a gig and now putting up big scores back in the year. It just shows as much research and skill you can have in this game, it always, that big element of luck does come into it. So don't get too down yourself if you're having a few poor weeks. 6 weeks to go on the downhill stretch. Thanks again for your time, Tommy. Looking forward to seeing you continue to charge. And it'd be nice if we can both sneak into this top 100. It'd be nice.
Yeah, it would be nice, wouldn't it? Hopefully I can get there and redeem myself from last year. And I think, you know, against the expectations you're set with a couple of top 10 or a couple of wins in fantasy and a top 10 last year in your first go as Supercoach, I think you're set in a pretty good position. Even though you've got no trades, you've got the cover there to keep climbing those ranks. So as long as we nail our captains, I reckon we should be able to get there.
Beautiful. Cheers, Tommy. Chat next week.
Cheers, mate. Bye. Magic. Oh.